Hello. You're listening to What the Fuck Do We Know? Today I'm going to start with something that has nothing to do with our conversation, just because I want to mention it. And even if this is going to come out like weeks after, or probably several, just maybe a few weeks after this, Chloe Bailey released the song of the summer today. And it is so fucking good. It's the best pop song I've heard. And fuck Spotify and Apple Music for putting it in the R&B category. They are forcing black women to conform to a category that just doesn't make sense. They forced her to be in a genre because she's a black woman. She cannot produce a pop song and have it on the pop charts. Instead, they put it in the R&B chart and it doesn't sound like R&B at all. So there you go.
There you go.
Yeah. But I just wanted to say that so everybody knows where I stand on that. I know people were like wondering.
Okay. You're not going to dance to it?
To what? To Boy Bye? That's the name of song, by the way. They can't see me dancing. You know, I've been dancing already all day. So, now let's, you know,
segue to nationalism.
Yes, to nationalism. Yeah, because it's because of white nationalism that Apple Music puts her in a box. So, yeah, nationalism.
White nationalism in the U.S. Christian nationalism.
No, just white first. Just white. Maybe we can go into Christian.
Is it a thing? White nationalism in the U.S.?
Yeah. And we're going to talk about it today. We're going to talk about why I think it has become more of a thing and just like how Trump is using it.
Okay. Then we'll also talk about Ukrainian nationalism.
Which is also white if you think about it.
Well, everything is white in Ukraine.
Well, except the people who aren't and have to be reminded that they aren't.
Okay. Yeah. Then maybe a little bit about Europe. I'm not sure.
About Europe?
Oh, there is an election, parliament election.
Sure.
Maybe just generally speaking, nationalism, right?
Yeah, let's get it. Let's get into it.
Well, do you want to start with the US, considering?
I mean, let's start with just talking about nationalism in general. Why is it something that you think you don't want in a country where you live? Because I assume that you don't like nationalism.
Okay. So I think my biggest problem with nationalism is that it's quite exclusionary.
Traitor.
I'm not talking about Ukrainian nationalism yet.
Okay.
But generally speaking, there are a couple of alternatives, right?
And hold on, let's stop there. You said exclusionary.
Yes.
To whom?
To people who don't belong to the same nation. It depends on the kind of nationalism.
I have an argument here with you. We've had a lot of conversations on this podcast, and I'll just off this podcast, and you are not the most inclusive person. You're always creating little caveats and little points where people can be excluded because it just makes sense. So why are you thinking
you have to
about,
give an example then.
Well, it's not...
Oh, right. So I can't really defend myself
because
you're referring to something that we're not getting into.
Sure, but you know what I am talking about.
I can't argue because...
Okay, are you going to say...
I'm going to say that...
Okay, this is the question. Do you think that inclusivity is a very important value for a society?
What is inclusivity? Everyone can have...
Yes, everyone has rights, everyone has access to kind of the same things, everybody is treated
to some extent.
To some extent doesn't mean inclusivity though.
Based on what, for instance, based on professional skills. Everyone, there should be some differentiation.
I'm not arguing
based on professional skills,
but I'm just saying that's not inclusivity, right? There is some exclusion.
There is some exclusion.
So why are you now having a problem with it when it comes to nationalism? If you're comfortable with some exclusion.
Well, because, then I think my response would be that there is inclusivity that is productive and has benefits. And there is inclusivity that doesn't give any benefits. And on the other side, it has a cost.
Okay. And nationalism is inclusivity, but anti-nationalism. What is the globalism?
Globalism, like liberalism.
Okay, this is inclusivity that gives benefits.
I think nationalism also has its own benefits, but I don't value those benefits.
Okay, let's
that
talk
high.
About the exclusivity of nationalism. It's exclusionary to whom? Continue.
to, first of all, other nations. If you have a mono-ethnic, it depends on the type of nationalism, right? Okay. There is civic, there is culture, there is, what else? Ethnic nationalism, right? So if you have a mono-ethnic country and you have ethnic nationalism, you never have, like, fully, you still have usually some minorities, right? So it's usually exclusive to those minorities, one. And even if you have fully mono-ethnic...
Exclusionary, not exclusive to them.
Exclusionary, right, thank you. So then it's exclusive to other nations. So at least that's the thing. That's first. Then it's also can get connected to authoritarianism, but that's already kind of the second problem that it can get... Because you put nation on the pedestal, and then there is a conflict of interest, for instance, with civil rights and like liberal values, and then you need to prioritize as a nationalist the interests of your nation, right? And then it usually ends up in, or it might end up
in
authoritarianism. I wanted to say, not necessarily fascism.
I think it could lead to fascism, and I think it's a really very steep slope. But anyway, my problem with nationalism, first of all, is that I just think it's very primitive.
It's, but that's, these are humans.
These are humans. And who are we?
We are humans too. We are humans. But like, what do you mean primitive?
No, I just think like,
it's like based
of, like,
on in-group, out-group bias, yes, and that's why it's primitive.
Yes. And just, okay, let's talk about
it. But it's love. How is it different? Like, it's just an emotion that we have.
Yeah, but you know my view on love as well.
It's also
love
primitive.
Is primitive. And I think that we need to get away from love.
But
I said
any,
this to you
any
before.
Emotion is primitive then.
Well, there are emotions that serve a function, right? And we do experience them. And I'm saying I don't experience love, but my interpretation of what I'm feeling and my expression of what I'm feeling is different from what I'm feeling. I'm going to feel love, but how I'm going to express it should develop and it should change. I think that nationalism as an ideology to keep for yourself, like to hold on to, is primitive. I think
so you have some kind of hierarchy of different emotions or feelings, or at least how the way you express those.
No, it's the way I express them. I think that I have like for example, love. I've said it's, I feel love and I do think it's primitive. But I think that it's I think that we have come to, well, if I've told you this before, where I think that we need to move away from love because I think it's restricting. I also can connect love to nationalism, and I think that there is a love for nation that is there. And again, a primitive thing.
What would be a less primitive way to express this love to your group?
Well, first of all, just love, the feeling itself, is primitive. So there is no way to express it less primitively. So I'm not saying that I don't feel this primitive thing, but I'm saying that I don't just express it as people do. It's a primitive feeling. I love my family. It does restrict me in many ways. It stops me from doing a lot of things.
So what is not primitive then?
I don't know yet. We can create a list sometime.
Okay. In the future episode, a list.
I don't know.
Hierarchy of...
You don't understand what I mean by love being... I just think that if it's something that... So this
that everyone shares, that's primitive.
Yes. And it's fine that it exists. I'm not going to get rid of it, but I acknowledge that it is restricting. And with nationalism, I consider the idea of like identity being connected to nation, culture, language, etc. I think that that's primitive.
I don't like it being called primitive because
you
has...
are part of it.
We are all part of it, I think.
You have a negative connotation for primitive?
I think it does have a negative connotations. Don't you agree? And also, you can't say what is not primitive. According to this logic, whatever we feel, whatever we think,
not,
it is limited in some way. And that's why it's primitive.
It's limited in some way?
Yeah, it limits us in some way. Whatever
happiness.
You think, whatever you feel, it limits you in some
happiness.
Way.
Happiness. Yeah.
What? It doesn't limit you?
What is the limitation that you get from happiness?
You seek it. You get addicted to happiness.
When you feel happiness, where is it? Because it's not just about the idea of love. It's about the feeling of love that I'm talking about.
A feeling of happiness?
How
and
is it
everyone, what, do you argue that it's primitive or no?
No, I'm asking you to explain how it's restricting.
Well, because you seek it, and that's why you feel happiness. And then once you don't, you miss it. And that makes you feel certain things to pursue happiness. So it limits you in the ways you behave.
Okay, then it's primitive. But the thing is that I'm not saying we don't feel it, but it is a primitive thing.
Okay.
And I think nationalism is very primitive, and I think that the clinging to nationalism just doesn't serve any purpose for me in terms of looking at the global population.
Global population, yes. But do you see benefits on other levels.
For a local group, yes. Yeah. But I'm not someone who thinks of like the world in this like nations, and I'm more of a globalist, I guess.
I'm also leaning towards globalism. Okay, let's go there. Do you think it's possible to?
Well, not in our lifetime, probably.
Yeah, I mean, one of the.
I feel like, you know, there's the EU is an example of like a kind of a government, right, that exists between several countries, and even in the EU existing and all these countries being part of the EU. I think that for Brexit to happen in this modern age, it's a sign that it's really far from us. And what is like the reason for Brexit could convince people economically, I guess that was their main argument.
I didn't really follow it closely.
My thing is that they had like an argument that was linked to economy, right? A lot of countries can have arguments that's just linked to culture, language, whatever, to separate from this government that's been formed. The EU, it's not a strong enough government for me to say like this is what a future of like the world or having a global government could look like. So I don't think in our...
I think it's the best we have.
Best we have, but I think that Poland had moments when they were considering...
Well, yeah, like, Euroscepticism has grown over the last couple of years.
Right. So because this best that we have... Yeah. Because this best that we have... is just not solid enough. I don't think that it's something that we will see in our future, some kind of global government.
I think, yeah, I agree that I don't expect anything even close to a global government over the next decades, I would say. And like, I think the war in Russia and Ukraine kind of showed that, or at least for me, that you like United Nations and like whatever security system we have, international cooperation we have, you can't really do anything with a state who has nuclear weapons.
Right.
And like...
So everyone should have nuclear.
And then like, you can't negotiate with anyone.
Yeah.
What do you do then? And like, not only the war in Ukraine, right? That we have all other points of tensions around the world, but like here specifically because Russia, I think...
Because you think you're more important than...
No. I think Russia, not Ukraine, Russia is more important because I don't think you can build... Russia is not a developed country, but considering their military power, like particular nuclear weapons, you can't build like proper international government without them being on board.
Well, they will respond probably negatively to something like that. Building an international government around Russia, excluding
Russia.
Well,
it depends how much power they get. But I think we are not even close. And then the problem is the great division. I think it's cultural even.
Yeah, this is the problem for me. It's that, well, maybe it's not a problem for me, but it is the main division, I think, that it's culture. And I struggle with it a little bit because I've talked to you about like my feeling about just preservation of culture. I do want people's cultures to be preserved in the sense as every culture should be preserved. But it is a struggle to do that while trying to embrace some kind of global society.
Yeah, I think there is a big, big contradiction here because then... You can't really do that if everyone has different cultures. You have to share some tenets.
Yeah, so like, it's not like I want everyone to have different cultures, but I don't want globalization to be the erasure of a culture, you know?
Yeah, I think there are some points that can be definitely saved, like music, like art, that's fine. Yeah, the problem, I think the biggest problem is around, I would say, secularism and maybe like these progressive, like even homophobia, for instance, like LGBT rights. There are just some regions on this planet that
Europe.
There are some more conservative countries, I agree. So it's really
Hungary, one of them, big one.
Yeah, Poland. I don't know if there is any change after the election, though.
I don't know. I saw a lot of people celebrating the election, like happening, like the election results, but I don't know that there is. I think that Slovakia's new president might be a little bit, maybe not a little bit, maybe quite homophobic.
I like, we are digressing, but this German AfD, Alternative for Germany, like far right. And I think one of their leader or one of the leaders, she's gay and she's in a partnership and like they have adopted children, but she's against gay marriages.
Let me introduce you to Caitlyn Jenner. Do you know this trans
woman? Yes.
dumb bitch. Really dumb.
Okay, back to nationalism. So your problem with nationalism, main problem that it is primitive. Do you have any other problems with it?
Also, as an immigrant, I can see the negative effects of nationalism as a scary thing for me. People usually, for example, we live in Ukraine and there is a growth in nationalism. It's undeniable. I think as a result of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, right? And the need for Ukrainians feel and believe that this is a genocide, that this is not just an attack on territory or just about expanding territory. They believe that it is an attack on the identity of Ukraine, on the idea of Ukraine in general. And I think that it has pushed for people to feel the need to elevate Ukrainian culture, history, language, etc. And that is fine, but there is a negative end of that that becomes nationalism. And people say it is, sorry for this long response, people say it is directed towards Russia, but I just see that when nationalism grows and it stays, as you said, it's exclusionary to some outside people who are not part of this group.
So you're saying that racism has grown with the growth of nationalism and Russophobia?
I don't think racism has grown yet, but I think that this increased tolerance to some kind of discrimination, I don't think it's different races, but let's call it an ethnic discrimination, it breeds ground for the growth of other forms of discrimination that could become racist, that like racism. Already racism exists in the country and it's a problem. If you ask me, I don't know, you might say no. But I think it's a problem.
I agree it's a problem. And but I think it's so focused against Russians. No, and also Ukrainians want to be part of the EU.
But that's the problem, is that you see that now as it's... And that's what everybody says. But as someone who has been on the receiving end of it, it's something that I can see that it changes. I can see a boldness in discrimination.
It is changing.
Yes, I see a boldness in discrimination because it's excusable. And what happens is when you tell people that it's okay to be discriminatory against an ethnic group, they will find another reason why it's okay to be discriminatory against another person. So as an immigrant myself, I see a danger in nationalism.
So one of my greatest concerns or realizations latest is how this Russophobia, it has become, people started, they basically started reclaiming this word. They started publicly saying that they are Russophobic.
And in the beginning, it was an accusation, right?
Yes. Now you reclaim and you say that you are proud of it.
Yes. And there's a slogan that it's not enough. Have you seen
this slogan? Yeah, of course. And that's very concerning because, I guess even more concerning for me is that it's very popular among younger generation, yes. Educated yes. people. This is basically future middle class elites of Ukraine. And they have liberal values. So for me, otherwise, I don't think this one is liberal, but otherwise they just say no discrimination of any sort than accept Russophobia.
That's my problem with it. Is you people say it's very targeted and very focused, but that's the thing, is that you cannot do that really. If you have started to create discrimination in your mind, if you've created space for discrimination, you'll find another target for discrimination. And I see this in conversations that I see online amongst young people. There is a disregard that has come into responding to the accusation, for example, of Ukraine being racist. There is no real conversation that responds to it, but there is a disregard for it totally, where people just say it's not. But there is a problem.
It's not racist?
Yes, that's all. But there is a problem, and there is a discrimination trend that is growing, even directed towards Russia, but it can expand. And it's young people. It's frustrating to me that it's young people who I feel should have, as you said, liberal values.
And they do otherwise.
But it's it's contradictory for me.
It is contradictory for me too.
I do have liberal values, and I don't like what Russia is doing in Ukraine. I could even go as far as saying I hate Putin, but I cannot say that I'm going to hate all Russians.
I think regarding Ukrainian nationalism, if we go there, so I mentioned these three types of civic nationalism, cultural nationalism, and ethnic. But in Ukraine, I think obviously when a country is involved in a war, you need this in-group favoritism, it kicks in. And for Ukraine, I think there was really not that many other options except for language. I think the second kind of tenet of Ukrainian nationalism. For other countries, you have you might have religion? Culture, religion.
Well, Ukrainians would say culture. You don't think that culture is a thing that can.
I think for Ukraine, so first, civic nationalism.
Okay.
The problem is that Ukrainians traditionally distrust government. Mm-hmm. Also, there is really not that much to be proud of. Ukrainian mm-hmm. economy sucks. Well, it does. Just check like the
GDP growth. I live here. It's okay.
Since 1990s, compare it to Poland, and that's you want to cry. So civic nationalism is not really an option. Ethnic nationalism, just because of the Ukrainian history and how there's been a lot of migration, a lot of Russians coming into Ukraine.
Well, I think people
Ukrainians coming to Russia.
I think people would argue that you have to go further back.
And then how far?
That is the question I always ask. But like, what was Ukraine?
And then in
before?
Crimea, you have only Tatars and like Crimean and what Ottoman Empire.
What is the nation of Ukraine? That's the big question.
So. I think ethnically it's very hard. You can't really distinguish Ukrainians from Russians just by looking at them. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of mixed families. That leaves us with only culture. And like culturally, I think the only real thing is language. Because otherwise, Ukrainians, people in Ukraine, they keep saying that
culturally,
Ukraine and Russia are different.
What is part of culture for you? Okay, language, what else?
Art, okay. Tradition, social norms.
Do you see, I don't know that much of it, honestly, but traditionally and according to social norms, do you think that it's different from Russia by and large?
I think it's, when it comes to European part of Russia, I don't think it's that different.
Where is the European part of Russia?
No, like Moscow, St. Petersburg. If you go to Dagestan, of course, it's different.
I don't think Moscow is that different from Dagestan. All right, but anyway, I was going to ask a question and I've forgotten.
I don't think they are different. And I think if you ask people, I have never heard anyone actually saying, people keep saying we are so different. But like, if you invite someone even from the Central Europe, I'm not even going to Latin America and like the US, they come to Ukraine and come to Russia, they will not notice any difference.
Not all of Russia. Point
European part of Russia.
I would say St. Petersburg, because I've spoken to some people from Moscow and I do think that they are very... My next question to you was, do you think that Ukrainians are more liberal than Russians? General, you have to make some kind of estimate.
I think before this full-scale invasion, not really.
Now?
Now, I think... Ukrainians are more incentivized because they want to be different.
Oh, because they want to be part of Europe.
Right, but this is kind of like, it has become like not okay to like publicly say that you're a homophobe, for instance.
But it is, but there are homophobes.
Did it change what they actually think and feel?
No, well, I think that probably there are people, I'm not sure how much, but I do believe that there are people who have reconsidered their stance on things like that because they have reconsidered what should separate them from Russia. And, you know, if there is some news like in Ukraine, a couple is walking on the street and they were beaten to death, you know, people will be like, no, that's not what Ukraine should be about. Because, you know, that's something that they would say you can see in Russia. So I think that that could lead them to want to try to change these values and change these opinions. And maybe they will become more liberal.
I do agree that the trend is definitely positive.
Yeah, it is positive.
But it's still like there is a long way to go.
About culture, I don't know what... I guess I've been told because I'm not Ukrainian, but I don't know the differences. And yes, you're right. I believe that if I went to St. Petersburg before the invasion, the full-scale invasion, if I went to St. Petersburg and Kyiv, I believe that I wouldn't necessarily feel such a big difference.
And you've lived here for a while.
Yes.
And now imagine just a foreigner coming to Ukraine and coming to Russia.
Yeah, If they're
attentive, they will notice the difference in language.
Yes.
But that's about
I would notice the difference in language. But let's come to art. What is the difference in art?
I'm really the worst person to ask.
No, because I don't know much about the art, but I have to guess that it's just the people who wrote it and the language that it was written in.
Oh, art when it comes to literature.
Literature, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's also one of
because I don't know, it's a huge part of Ukrainian art connected to the struggle of Ukraine to get away from Russia.
Yeah, I mean, it depends who you pick, because, you know, it, like, retrospectively, you just keep digging and finding people in the past whose, like, ideas and actions, behavior is aligned with your current political views, and not only political. And then you start reading them and make them popular, make them, like, big parts of your current culture. But, like, back then, they might have not been that big. So you see, there is, like, retrospectively, you can kind of mend this art and then reclaim some people from the past. But then the problem is, like, based on which, like, features do you say that someone is a Ukrainian writer?
Well, because language, if they were from Ukraine, wrote in Russia because they lived in the Soviet Union, in Russian because they lived in the Soviet Union. So what are,
like,
they?
Like, Russian Empire, yeah. Right. And, like, they could have lived on the territory of Ukraine, but maybe still, they supported, yeah. They felt or identified as like, well, small Russians, yeah. For instance. They didn't have Ukrainian identity.
Right.
So can you say they were Ukrainian? You can say that they were, like, I don't know, they're brainwashed, and that's why...
I don't like the erasure that comes with, like, connecting nationalism to art and, like, to art, because I just feel... I don't like erasure of from in general, you know this. I don't like erasure. I don't like, like, this removal of people from, like, their history and this kind of, like, clearance of these people. I think it's a mistake. I think retrospectively, Ukrainians will not like it because it is part of their history. I don't think there's much change you can do about it. And silencing this part of history will make it forgotten. And eventually, history forgotten is history repeated.
I think a lot of history that was forgotten remained forgotten.
No, things happen, but we don't think about them. We don't draw back to them because we don't teach them. Because
yeah, we should learn.
It's important that people in the future, Ukrainians in the future, will understand the context of this war, understand the context of people who were fighting against Russia, who were, like, trying to end this oppression, understand why people talk about Bandera and why that was happening there, and why people call what is the conversation about Nazism or whatever, if it exists in Ukraine or not. I think that even if this information for many of Ukrainians doesn't seem like a good light for Ukraine, it's all necessary for people to understand the historical importance of what's happening here.
I agree, but at the same time, I don't feel like it's realistic not to get history, not to let the government to politicize history.
No,
like, politicians will always do that
about it. I'm just expressing my
frustration. I don't think it's a good thing.
But let's go back to, like, you mentioned the, like, reading back and looking into people in the past and then picking features to make them, like, Ukrainian. Let's talk about that, because we had a little argument before off the record. We had a little argument before because I was very angry about some guy who a street was named after. Do you remember this argument? We're not going to rehash it here. There's the question, how do they prioritize then? So if Ukraine now, in terms, like, as they build this nationalism, is looking for nationalism based on culture, and they go and they look into these figures, artists, politicians, soldiers, whomever, and these people are pro-Ukrainian, they have very pro-Ukrainian ideologies and writings and texts or whatever, how do they prioritize this cultural significance versus the what we would call negative attributes of these people? So the person I gave you was one example, and that person was a racist, is dead. Not secret, not a secret racist, right? And in that moment, I think that you consider those two things, and the racism, for me at least, is worse. It's so bad that it cancels out the, like, nationalism in that case. And that will happen from time to time again as they go back. So how will they prioritize? How do they choose?
I mean, the problem is that you do agree that any nation, like, okay, in the context of nationalism, any nation needs myths, like... national myths.
I know
that's
they
how
do
it happens.
But this is from, like,
you need heroes.
We even have to go back there. I don't think heroes are necessary. But whatever.
But we agree that at least most nations that I know about,
they use heroes.
Right. So, and the problem is that when you go back, like, most people.
This is why I don't like the heroes. Go on.
Right. And then you have Bandera, take, for instance, like, Ukrainian nationalists of that time. The problem is that they symbolize right now Ukrainian resistance.
Sure.
They fought for Ukrainian resistance.
Mm-hmm.
But also, they didn't like Polish people, and they didn't like Jews. and potentially they were engaged. They were engaged in some very like massacres. And the problem is that you can't get one without getting the other. The same way the founding fathers also they were fine with racism, what we would call right now racism.
Founding fathers?
American.
Founding fathers. We don't live there. We're not from there. Fathers of whom? They were okay. Yes. And I have the same problem with them.
Yeah.
I don't understand. So I understand why people, again, primitive. It is so fucking primitive. Why can't the Ukrainian resistance be formed by the people who are alive now who want Ukrainian freedom? Why do you have to create this myth? Why do you have to create these legends and these heroes that are very problematic? And a lot of times, not all the time, but a lot of times you will find, because they lived in a different time, definitely, you will find that a lot of their values don't align with your liberal world that you have now. For me, that is enough to drop them. You don't need legends. You don't need myth. You don't need to create some special fighter or special flyer who is some kind of, who becomes some kind of god for your cause.
But it makes of a more powerful story and a narrative.
Primitive.
And how do you motivate people to die for the country? You need a myth. You need some kind of narrative.
They live in the country now.
Yeah, but it's much easier.
Like, you live in a country now. You have family now. You have people that you care about. You can muster without any kind of like story to get draw inspiration for. If you cannot muster enough like inspiration to protect the people around you that you have now, not to protect a history that you have learned, then I don't think that you, I don't know, you shouldn't do it. If you cannot
but
do it without this history,
you
shouldn't.
If you are a state and you need to protect yourself, the reasonable thing here is to create this myth because it's going to motivate more people.
And I'm not saying it's not the reasonable thing. I'm just saying it's primitive and it's a problem.
Okay,
because what will happen
primitive.
40 years from now, 50 years from now, people are going to look back and they're going to find problems with more people. And we keep this happens not just in Ukraine. It happens around the world. You change names, you change streets, you pull down statues. Why the fuck are they standing in the first place? Why do we need heroes and myths and all this stuff? I'm so, like, this is one thing I'm 100% against. Don't name a street after
any
a person.
Any statues?
Any at all okay. of people. People. Don't, like, iconize people. Mm-hmm. Don't. Even Jesus.
No. Wow.
I'm serious because we will find it's so ridiculous to come back 50 years and start having this conversation about getting rid of this statue. There'll always be people who will say, no, we can't. It's part of our history. People will say, this does not represent us now. It's there. You put it there.
I mean, I agree. I also don't like idolizing people. I don't really care much about statues or sculptures.
It's part of the idolization of people.
It is part. So I like, they're not very... No, I'm not the kind of person who goes sightseeing and and just likes to look at a statue. I'm fine with the Wikipedia page and a couple of photos on the internet. But yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I think it's important for like people who have done specific things that were impactful to be like to have information on them. We can have them in libraries, but don't name a street after them. Because, you know, don't make them a thing.
So what would you name streets after?
Numbers. Just call it number. Number one street, like first street, second street, third street, fourth street, fifth
Maybe
street.
Maybe companies. Oh, you can sell ads. Like
sponsored by
sponsored
by
streets.
Apple. Honestly, you know what?
And then you have Apple 4,
well,
Apple 5.
We really appreciated capitalism in this world. So why not celebrate the people who have won capitalism?
And then you can have like an entire city
Tesla.
Sponsored by a company.
Yeah, Tesla can sponsor Kiev. I don't think people would like Elon Musk these days here in Kiev. He's a problem. I think he's an idiot, but he's a smart idiot.
He's smart about some
him.
Things.
Yeah, but... we're not talking about him today. But yeah, see, I just think that when people separate, I think it's very primitive to have that connection for your nationalism. I just think it's a nationalism already is primitive. And this is just extremely primitive. When you do this myth and legends and heroes and stuff, because if you cannot muster up inspiration to fight for your country, that you have people currently alive that have an experience there and would benefit from your protection of the country, then maybe don't do it.
From individual perspective, I agree. from the state perspective.
You're not distinct.
I'm not distinct.
You're not the state.
I'm not the state. No one is the state.
Well,
but it exists.
I am a state.
You're a state.
God said we are all gods. So, yeah.
Okay, coming back to the language. Right. So I think there are two tenets of Ukrainian nationalism, Russophobia and language. And language is because, as I said, there is not really that much stuff that you can Ukrainians can differentiate themselves from Russian. And in order to have nationalism, like any in-group favoritism, you need to say how you are different. And then I think, again, this in-group favoritism, it exists for a reason. It evolved through evolution for a reason, right? To protect your group, interests of the group. But it has a downside, which is usually Russian-speaking minority in Ukraine.
Right. Suffering from it.
Right. So, okay. That's not the right question for you. Maybe it is. You're learning Russian, so...
What?
No, do you think that there is a discrimination of Russian
language in Ukraine? I think that it is over-exaggerated, definitely online. I think that with younger people, it's more than...
Exaggerated by whom?
People talk about it online. I'm talking online.
Are you talking about people outside of Ukraine?
Yeah, outside of Ukraine.
Okay,
yeah, outside of Ukraine. I think it's over-exaggerated online. I think a lot of young people don't want Russian to be spoken. But I think it's exaggerated online. I've never had a problem with it. No, not that's not true. I have had a few problems with it. I think in communication with businesses, it's been an issue. I understand that they should speak Ukrainian. But I expected that if you said, can you speak Russian, especially as a foreigner, that they would be more willing to, but they don't. So I've had some moments with it, but I don't think that it's as bad as people say it is. Nevertheless, I think it's a problem. I think it's a growing problem. I think as the more the war lasts, the more people join the gang of people who... But I again, if you want to know my opinion, I just think it's very... You know the word I'm going to say.
What? Primitive?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just think connection of, identity to... I think it's because I don't feel these things. I don't experience this connections. Mm-hmm. Of language to identity, nation, or whatever. Maybe that's why I speak this way.
But don't you feel connection to English?
What? I use it. I know how to speak
English. Yeah, but imagine that you wouldn't be able to use it. Like, it is such a big part of you because this is your main language.
Yeah,
right?
But that's all. I don't feel like I want to fight for the English language. If we changed the language in the world somehow and English started to die off and we had to learn French, I'd learn it.
You'd learn it?
Yeah.
You wouldn't have a problem people saying you can't speak English?
No, I'm not saying I wouldn't have a problem with that, but I'm just saying that I don't feel that much of a connection to English to go I would have a problem with people saying you can't speak any language. I don't think that should be done at all. But if we had to learn, because if French started to grow faster than English in some kind of weird world, I would just learn French.
I think it's so difficult to learn a new language.
It is
at our age.
But it is, but that's not the point of what I'm saying, is it?
No, but my point to connect it to Ukraine, that right now asking people, especially people of older generation, a lot of people in the USSR in Ukraine, they studied in Russian speaking schools.
Right, yeah.
So for them, in their 40s, 50s, right? 50s, you can't really force. I mean, I think it's immoral to ask them to change the language. Is so for me, because I grew up learning in a Ukrainian speaking school, I think it would be easier.
Sure.
It's doable, but for someone older, I think it's so hard. And I think language is such a big part of your
life.
Identity and how
I don't
you
think of identity.
Not, okay, not identity,
just part
like
of
yourself,
your
your ego. You just use language. You connect to this language. You express many things that you feel, you only express it through language, and they would make sense. Okay, maybe not feelings, more complex ideas. You can only express them through language. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a word for it in another language, you basically become 10 times less smarter.
No, I think it's, I agree with you. I should correct myself. I don't think it's not possible to identify with language. I just think that it shouldn't be. But anyway, I agree with you. I think it's immoral, actually, to ask people who are of older generations, older ages, who have spoken Russian all their life, and who are able to make a distinction between Russia and Ukraine and be able to say, yeah, I speak Russian language because that's the language I grew up speaking, but I don't support the Russian government in this situation. I think it's immoral. I think it's insulting to them to be like, you are spreading Russian propaganda because you're speaking Russian. It reduces people. It means they don't know how to think.
I agree. So I've heard kind of two clusters of arguments why there should be Ukrainization, especially like this more forceful Ukrainization. So the first one is around national security. And the second one, I guess I would call it like sensitivity and politeness. This is only my categorization. So like this is sensitivity and politeness. Some people say that it just Russian language triggers them. And in some cases, I think it's quite justifiable. For instance, I watched some interviews of prisoners of war who came back to Ukraine, and then they were tortured there. And they say that this like Russian language triggers them because people who tortured them, they spoke in Russian, and they are, for instance, from Western Ukraine, so they are not used to Russian language. So that is reasonable from my perspective.
But they're going to go back to Western Ukraine, and Western Ukraine people speak Ukrainian to them.
No, but there are people
Ukrainians who are from East Ukraine, they were speaking Russian all their lives, right? They went and they were tortured with Russian.
Yeah. Well, so for them, it's different. But I
agree with you. For those people, I agree with you. Yes. It's something that you should.
But then the majority of people, they haven't been in that situation. Yeah. And like, especially when people live abroad, and then it somehow triggers them. I mean, I think psychology like works different, like our psyche works different. But honestly, like, I don't believe that it can damage
the line. Yeah, I don't get how the journey to being triggered.
You can't just get triggered by watching or listening to Russian songs. How do you get triggered? You get triggered, not like, you can't get a panic attack from that, unless you've been like in an extreme situation. So this, like the second line is national security. That also doesn't make much sense for me.
Why not?
So, I mean, the best argument I've heard is that something along the lines that if Ukrainians hadn't spoken any Russian, yes, they're like the probability of Russia. Okay, this is me improving the argument. The probability of Russia invading would have been lower.
And okay, but does this factor in the fact that Ukraine was part of the Russian Empire, part of the Soviet Union? So when is this thing of if Ukraine hadn't spoken Russian? If Ukraine had stopped speaking Russian in the early 2000s when Putin came into power, do you think that Putin wouldn't have had this argument that Ukraine was trying to destroy Russian-speaking Ukrainians?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think the argument people make is that since the dissolution of USSR, you've had already like 23 years. I think that yes, it doesn't take into account that what happened, people don't just randomly change their language in their 40s. Like or 30s.
Even if you're 20s, you don't just wake up and change your language.
Yeah, unless there is a very good reason for it. And then,
I think
yes,
it's extremely, extremely disrespectful to, not disrespectful. I would stick with immoral to just like, not just to expect people to have changed their language so quickly, to expect people to feel the exact same thing that you feel and immediately conform to your idea of how they should be living. It just doesn't happen that way. And if you see a grandmother speaking Russian and you get upset, I think there's a problem there.
I agree. But I also like this national security thing. So I do partially agree with that argument that yes, but this is counterfactual. It wasn't the reality.
Yeah.
And like
But you can't have an argument like that and say you agree with it when it just.
Well, isn't. Yeah. Okay. I agree with. Like, had it been somehow, if it wasn't the case, then yes.
Thing is that because, I disagree with the argument because even, the thing is that Ukrainians, is this argument factoring Russian Empire and the Soviet Union? Because Ukrainians were part of this empire and Soviet Union. And yes, the language might have been oppressed. I don't know fully, but I believe it was oppressed, right? The Ukrainian language. Yes.
Sometimes it wasn't, but mostly it was.
Yes, so the language was oppressed. But the thing is that people were speaking Russian already. So this argument of saying if Ukrainians weren't speaking Russian, then Russia wouldn't have like seen the angle or whatever to come and invade here. At what point does this begin? Before the Russian Empire, Russian Empire, Soviet Union, or 91?
91, yeah.
But there's things that Ukrainians were speaking Russian then at that time too.
Yes. And so, also like...
And if Ukrainians stopped speaking Russian immediately after 91 and started to like, you know, socially kind of ban Russia, not like legally, but like socially ban Russian language, I believe that Russians would have eventually found a reason to invade as well, as in the discrimination of Russian speaking people in Ukraine.
Yeah, it could have led to the invasion.
It could have led to the invasion as well.
Through a different way. Also, Russia could have, even without all of this, Russia could have still invaded and said that they're defending their borders against NATO. So, and that's their narrative right now.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, Russia can come up with whatever bullshit argument they want just to support the war.
Yeah. Also, another thing that I don't like is that people say that they're like crucified Ukrainians, right? But can you call someone crucified if they've lived their entire life speaking Russian? And can you say that they're
crucified? What does it mean to be crucified? Just speaking the language?
Well, language and culture, I guess.
Right, but so why don't people make that, it's funny to use this word, but discrimination when they talk about language and culture? It's possible to speak a language and not. Africans that were colonized speak their colonizers' languages, mm-hmm. even up till now. They still retain their own languages at the same time. Their cultures are very different from a lot of Western cultures. Why don't people understand or see that it's possible to differentiate those two things?
Because as we have talked about it, that there isn't, except for language, there isn't really that much, because Africa is very different culturally, like historically from Europe, right? Ukraine has been, at least partially, the left bank of Ukraine has been with Russia for centuries. And like the Western, the right bank for 100 years. So it's like, it's relatively similar. And you need this differentiator.
I guess, yes. We have a few minutes to talk about something that I think is growing in the US.
Okay.
White nationalism. And I think that it's very much connected to white Christian nationalism. I think there's a growing trend in the US where a lot of nationalists are going around and making the statement like the founding fathers founded this country on God. And I think that it's this, you know, for like convincing Christians to come join this nationalist movement, just starting from that. And then there is the spreading of the replacement theory. I think those two things go hand in hand now, because the people who were spreading replacement theories were just white nationalists in the beginning, but they saw an opening with evangelists. Evangelical people. What do they call them? Evangelicals, right?
I don't know.
Christians in the US. There are a lot of them. And they saw an opening with them because they could tie liberalism as an attack on Christianity. And then they adopted this thing about the founding fathers wanted the US to be founded on God and also to be white. And they find friends in the Christian community which is afraid of abortion, trans people, LGBTQ, blah, 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 whatever scary thing you can tell them, whatever ghost story you can tell them about, like people coming to their schools and teaching their children about penises and vaginas that changing, whatever. And I think that they have found a good union. They have married these groups and they're growing. And this is for the Christians, I think it's a response to the progressiveness in the US. It has been quite quick in the past 10 years, mm-hmm. I believe. And for the white nationalists, I believe it's a response to Barack Obama. Another way you can tie in the Christian nationalists and the white nationalists, Barack Obama, Barack Hussein Obama. Islamophobia is a very big part of Christian nationalism in the US.
And replacement theory is a part of it.
Yeah.
But regarding the founding fathers, like, well, sometimes it gets, because I don't follow the US that closely, but like sometimes I hear people referring to the founding fathers wanted this, that, and this. And for me, it's like, why do you care what people 300 years
so
wanted to do?
To me.
It's like so outdated.
I forget what they call these people who are the constitutionalists, but the kind of people who don't change. They stick to the...
Oh, right.
I forget what they call them, but they stick to the original text.
I've heard about it.
Yeah, and I'm like, what the fuck? Are you serious? The times are so different. And yet you want to stick to the original text.
And people recognize, they usually recognize because, some changes.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. Because like, if you want to go back, I think in the US, when they said, when they founded this country as for all men, slaves were not part of them.
What about women?
Also women, yeah, let's talk about that. So you are going back, and then this is, but you know, Donald Trump has found that he can win with those people, but I think it's a small percent, it's not big enough to make him win. But he feels like he has found that he can win with those people, and so he empowers them. He released the Bible, his Bible, and what does he put in the Bible? The Constitution. These are things that, see, this is my point. They've married these two groups together, and I don't know if these people are aware, or the Christians are aware of how, like, the white nationalist groups are using them, but they've successfully been married, and now they are the, I think that in the US, the FBI has said, like, the biggest threat, terrorist threat, is domestic terrorism by white nationalists. Mm.
I think we can kind of tie it, like, nationalism and religion. Like, there is some overlap there in terms of the idea of this higher good and, like, complete devotion to some higher abstract idea. And, right, so a lot of, in Ukraine, for instance, Bandera, his father was a priest, and, like, generally a lot of nationalists, they came from religious families. They just kind of substituted this idea of God with a different, like, rational idea, more modern at that time, of a nation. And that's, I guess, the takeaway here for me, is that you just don't put any idea on that pedestal. Or maybe not, I don't know, do I put my ideas, like liberal ideas, do I put them on the pedestal?
Because I think you do.
I mean, maybe we have to. Like,
you have to live by something.
Yeah, you have to make decisions based on something.
Based on something, yeah.
But you can kind of have like a network of ideas, like, rather than have one idea.
And you can't, because you don't like to talk about right and wrong, but I feel like I can confidently say that I believe. Yeah, I mean,
beliefs are right.
No, I believe that liberalism is the right way to go.
The right
for our global world. Originalist.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Constitutionalist.
Yes, right. So do we bring it to an end?
Yes.
This was fun.
This was fun.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.